this week on The Inside Flap.
Which I'm very grateful for. I mean, I really, although, you know, I don't know about you, but like COVID really impacted my memory. I think I am going to have to carry a notebook around and then run the risk of never being invited anywhere. You're the weird one with the notebook. Go away.
Oh, you mean you just stored them in there?
I just stored it because I had to grab my flip-flops.
You didn't leave them outside on the porch of the place you're staying?
No. Put them inside a car.
So I went to get in the car. I'm like, my God, what died in here? I mean, we're talking. I mean, it was. Did somebody leave a fish under one of the seats?
It was bad.
It was awful. And I was just like, and Med's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm thinking, what is it? And Med's like, oh, that's my tennis shoes. Like,
yeah, that's my run shoes.
He knew.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus. Welcome to the show. Seated across the snack shack, to my right, Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the floral settee.
Not that comfortably.
Not that, no. He's got a
12-week-old puppy mouthing on him.
Puppy trying to gnaw his wrist off. That's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Excelsior. Welcome to episode 261 of
The Inside Flap
Book Podcast. Got a great show for you today. We have our book recommendations.
Book reviews.
We've got our, what else we got? We just keep giving and giving and giving. Oh, that's right.
Audio
we got
the book of the week.
Audio book of the week. And our guest tonight or today, whenever you're listening, this morning, midnight, 2 a.m., whenever it is you choose to listen to the show, our guest is Marion Keyes. You know Marion Keyes, Irish writer, international best-selling author of Watermelon and Lucy Sullivan Is Getting Married. She's got a new book out now featuring characters from the Walsh family. So get excited. It's very funny. It's called My Favorite Mistake, and we'll have that chat. She was delightful. I really enjoyed chatting with her, and we'll have that for you in just a second. But first, as you can see on our Facebook page, Andrew, your sister Joanne, shout out Joanne. She was the first one to like it, and I just put it up today.
Oh, great.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to tell you about my favorite mistake.
Oh, great. Lovely.
Which of my three kids is that?
Which your favorite is the one that you're not upset with at the moment.
Okay. Right? It depends. Andrew, yeah, and that's exactly. It depends on the week.
Depends on the week. Or the day.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you go to our Facebook page, you will see that Sylvie and I got matching tattoos. You go back to listen to episode 260 to hear the origin story of that. It was Sylvie's idea. Actually, it came from my mom.
Now, David.
Complaining about tattoos. Then Sylvie got an idea to get a trombone. So we both played trombone. We played it together with the flames coming out of it because we both liked the song Bonfire. And also because it looks really cool. So she had the idea. So we called a couple of different tattoo places in Littleton. Wanted to support some Littleton local businesses. Booked the place downtown.
The fancy one.
The fancy one, yes. And we had a consultation ready to go. And then the next day, we got, or Sylvia got a message back from the guy from, and I want to give him a shout out, Alternative Arts Tattoo. Turns out, Andrew, right at the end of this street, I'm not going to give our address away.
No.
But right at the end of our street, Cedar Street. Right at the end of Cedar Street here, when you get to Littleton Boulevard, there's a big building, and our neighbor across the street, Vishnu, works there. And he's got his print shop there. There's a tattoo place on the second floor. And this guy returned the call, and he's like, I would love to do your tattoo. His name is Hanson. Shout out Hanson. Great guy. Because I played trombone. Yep. And he was very excited. He said, I got some designs for you, so come on down. So we canceled the other place. I got, Andrew, I don't know if you're like me, but I was too scared to actually call the business during business hours to cancel. So I waited until they were closed and called them when they were closed.
You don't have to make like business calls all the time.
Right.
I have to make calls, cold call, like all kinds of weird calls all day long. So you lose it.
Well, I'm just
but
afraid.
I used to be like you when I didn't have a job that required that.
That's true.
Where I would avoid stuff.
I
like
don't want to let them down.
So this is a tattoo shop.
Yes.
How many flaky customers do you think they've got? I mean, seriously.
That's true.
What do you think the cancel rate is?
Well, this guy...
I'm guessing the cancel rate at tattoo places is probably at least 30-some percent.
And this guy, Hansen, was telling us, he had one time he had two people in there getting matching tattoos. The first person goes, the second person was like, nope, not doing it. Huh. So the one guy had the tattoo, the other one didn't. He said the only tattoo that he refused to do... It was a kid, or he thought he was a kid. Kid called up or left a message for the tattoo he wanted, and it was based on a cartoon character named Dick Butt.
Oh, my goodness.
He wanted it actually on his butt.
Huh.
And you can imagine, you can look up what this character looks like, but let's say it's, the name says it all.
Well, you don't become a tattoo artist to do things like that.
No, and Hansen, and listen.
Also, if you can turn people, like... You know, I'm self-employed.
Yeah.
And to get to work hard, to be able to turn people, like to take jobs you don't have to take, it's the best thing in the world.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
You know, Hansen is a real artist. We got to see all his, Sylvia was worried about the pain. The only thing I was worried about is that we'd get it wouldn't look good. It was what my fear was. But when we walked in there, saw his artwork on the wall, his design that he drew. I'm like, oh, this is it. This is perfect. This is great.
Yeah, he's talented.
Yeah.
And the fact that Hansen has experience playing it, he has a feel for the trombone, right? He doesn't just know what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yep.
He intimately knows that instrument.
Well, it turns out he played it 1 year in fourth grade. But, I mean, you know, I told him, once in the trombone community,
but
you're always in the trombone community.
That was
community.
One hell of a year,
that
though.
That was a great year, man. Let me tell you. He slid with the best of them on that year. So... Sylvia was nervous about the pain, and she didn't want to get up there. She's like, "I'll go first," because she was afraid if she didn't go first, she would see me in pain or whatever something, and she would chicken out. So I'll go first, and he told her, "Well, what I can do is put just water in the gun, and then shoot water into your skin or I don't know how it works, whatever, but it." It
you kind
simulates.
Of do it, you do it with the water jets, right?
Yeah, and it simulates the feeling without actually putting ink into your body. So she's like, "Yeah, let me do that." He starts doing that. She starts smiling.
Oh.
Like, what the hell are you doing? She said, "Oh, that it tickles. It tickles." And the whole time and it took an hour when she got her tattoo. The whole time she's just smiling.
Mm.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, "Oh, this is going to be no problem." But Hansen. I mean, he would just, so he took his time, like putting the stencil on, he put it on three different times, getting the angle just right, getting, and we'd all look at it, he'd have her walk around, and really just so much time spent before he even like started inking it up, just getting the stencil on the skin beforehand was what went a lot into it. And then he started asking us, he's like, "Hey, you're getting a trombone tattoo. You must be really into trombone. Who are your favorite trombone artists? And what kind of..." And, you know, the problem is, if you're getting a tattoo of a trombone, you should really be able to say more artists than Sylvia and I, other than just Trombone Shorty. I mean, we sounded we like to play it.
How many famous trombone players are there,
though? Well, he immediately is like, "Oh, yeah, you got to listen to Galactic." And then there's people on Facebook are telling me all these trombone people.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm not...
That's embarrassing.
Idiotic. But he played trombone music for us. It's a funk jazz band, Galactic. Really, really cool. It turns out he's also a big fan of Big L. And as a Big L aficionado myself... And every time I tell someone about him, usually the sound I get is, "Was that?" But Hanson, his eyes just lit up. "Oh, Big L! Yeah, I love Big L. Old school rapper from the 90s. Huh. So,
I don't even know him. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Was he part of the Rap Wars? Tragedy of the Rap Wars.
Well, pretty much, yeah. Because he was trying to find his brother was murdered, and he was trying to track down. I think he was like 19 or 20 years old.
Yeah.
when he was killed. Yeah, but we were having a great time. Hansen did a great job at just, as he said, I'm just going to run my mouth. And he was just chatting. We were all having a good time chatting. The owner of the shop came in, sat down, and within 3 minutes, he's talking about his friend who OD'd on Christmas Day. So that got a little heavy. Brought the mood down a little bit, but he left. So we were left with just Hansen, which was delightful.
That's funny.
And a good time. And then, yeah.
So here my question is.
Yeah.
Now, Mary Medicus was against tattoos.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she didn't really come up with the idea, but she was the catalyst.
It was the MacGuffin. Yes,
but
for
here's
sure.
the question.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the two of you have gotten trombone tattoos,
yes. mm-hmm.
how has Mary Medicus's perspective changed on tattoos?
She loves it. She loves ours. That's a great question.
That is a great question.
You need to ask her. Maybe I need to do a dive on that.
Yeah.
She's all for ours because she thought, well, that means something. That means that's a delight. That's just nice. You guys both play trombone. It's great.
She does not sound like that.
She sounds exactly like that.
Now, David.
See, that's great.
But you know, it's a perfect example of perspective. Oh, tattoos are awful.
You're right, Andrew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until it means something, a little bit of a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hansen was telling us about this guy who got a, because he had all the pictures on the wall, and I pointed at one. It was like a grilled cheese sandwich being pulled apart.
Wow. That's cool.
Wow, this is cool. Grilled cheese. I said, you ever put this on anyone? He's like, oh yeah. But unfortunately, the guy, he ruined the tattoo for Hansen because he whined and complained so much as he was tattooing.
Oh, that it hurt?
That the whole experience was ruined for him. But anyway, so Sophie got hers. She hops down. We're all very excited. We're high-fiving. I'm like, that looks great. And it's my turn. So I get up there, and it's like a massage table, kind of like, or like you see at a doctor's office, like a table. And I guess it could sit up, but we were laying down because it's so we got it on our calves. I guess I should have mentioned that. We got it on our lower calves. So I get up there and I lay down. And he starts, he's like, oh, you need the water. I said, no. Oh, come on. I don't need no water. Let's go. Let's just dive right in.
Oh.
He's like, oh, yeah. Look at you. Cool as a cucumber.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
You're legendary in our little family of three for having a very high pain tolerance.
High pain tolerance. I'm always bleeding.
Sylvia
you're like,
and I.
How did you hurt yourself?
If I had been cut in the ways that he has, I would know exactly how it happened.
That's true. I would have
told everyone.
That's true.
I would have detailed it. I might acquire a limp or whatever.
I'm always coming home with some kind of new scar or yes. scab from working.
So Dave's favorite expression, it's only a flesh wound.
Just a flesh wound. Just a flesh wound.
Yeah. So I could see why if it didn't hurt Sylvia.
Yeah. I said, I'm cool as the other side of the pillow. Let's go.
Yeah.
I get up there. He grabs it was cool because he had the old ones up on the wall, and the old ones are like metal, and they look like torture instruments.
Oh, wow.
What he's got, it looked like a pen, didn't it? Real fat pen.
Yeah.
And he's got like this pink soft thing that he holds onto it around. He's got wrapped around it. Just like a big old fat pen.
Yeah.
So no problem. So I lay down. Now I can't, it's so, because I'm laying down, he always says you should watch it, but it was just too awkward for me to lean up, and it's on the side of my calf. So I'm like, I'll just lay down on my side and you can do it. As soon as he starts, I mean, the very first initial offering, I'm like, I was not smiling. Oh. It did not tickle. It felt like, and I've seen it described this way online, and this is what it felt like to me, like getting a bee sting over and over and over again.
Wow.
That's what I've heard, like, laser hair removal in a certain place for women. I've heard it's like getting stung by hundreds of angry bees.
Yeah. So that's what it felt like to me. Not a huge bee, but like a little bee. And just over and over again. And I'm like, oh, man. I start to try to play it cool. But then I'm like, oh,
you can't.
Well, where are those? Still got a little stress ball. I was like, where are those stress balls? Give me those stress balls. I start squeezing on the stress balls. And I start sweating. And then I realize I didn't wear any socks. And because he's working on my calf, he's like got his arm down there, like literally resting on my feet.
Oh.
And I'm sweating out of my feet. And I feel so, because I'm nervous too, because all the pain, I'm like, I got an hour of this ahead of me. And I'm like, hey, answer, man. I forgot to wear socks.
Toe was it? Was it the bad toe?
No, it wasn't the one with the bad toe. Not the foot where I ran over with the lawnmower. But that was bare as well. But no, it was the other foot, like right up by his face. And Andrew, you know from experience with my, I did take a shower. So I don't know how bad that smells.
Speaking of Dave Medicus and smells.
Yeah.
This is the perfect time to introduce. So we took a road trip, which is documented on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
About a month back. But in any event.
Up to Wyoming.
There was a point in time where Dave went out for a run. And he basically took his sweaty tennis shoes from his run, and he basically put them in my car.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, not basically. I did.
You did.
I put them in the back of the car.
I went, like an hour later, I went to get in the car.
Oh, you mean you just stored them in there?
I just stored it because I had to grab my flip-flops.
You didn't leave them outside on the porch of the place you're staying?
Put them inside a car.
So I went to get in the car. I'm like, my God, what died in here? I mean, we're talking. I mean, it was. Did somebody leave a fish under one of the seats?
It was bad.
It was awful. And I was just like, and Med's like, oh yeah. I'm thinking, what is it? And Med's like, oh, that's my tennis shoes. Like,
yeah, that's my running
he
shoes.
He knew.
I literally took them and then threw them in the front lawn from there. Yeah, I did. I did feel bad for that. All right, but it was, thank you to Hanson. He made it a great experience for both of us. He did tell. I'll just share one last funny story that he told. He said one time he had this army recruiter come up to him. He said, hey, you do temporary tattoos? And Hans was like, no, we don't do temporary tattoos. And the reason why was because he had a recruit coming in that he wanted to enlist, but the potential recruit had a tattoo on his chest of a naked woman. So the recruiter wanted him to cover up the woman's nipples with like a temporary tattoo. And he said the weird thing was like her nipples were right next to the guy's nipples.
Wait,
was,
why did he want to cover them up with a temporary tattoo?
So the guy could enlist in the army.
Oh, so he could go out and fight for his country.
Yeah.
Okay. I see. Yeah. Like a woman's nipples are going to cause, like you're not going to fight as good if you don't have that.
No. I guess because you...
You're just not going to.
Who knows? Yes, Andrew, did you have something?
Might argue you'd fight harder.
That's right.
Yeah. What was the name of that? What was the name of that tattoo place again?
Yes, that is Alternative Arts Tattoo. Check it out in Littleton, Colorado. Alternative Arts.
And Laura, there was something about your comment, which don't look too deeply at what you just said.
Now I'm done.
All right. Anyway, Laura, how's your week been?
My week's been fine. I am not like you, Dave. I am not a risk taker. Mm-mm. I am risk averse. To a detriment. Yeah. I would say to my detriment. Real risky thing I've ever done probably was start my own business.
I mean, that's a lot more risky than getting a tattoo.
I guess so. But I don't know. What's the worst that could happen? You just have to go out and work for somebody else. Like, not a big deal.
Well, I guess you're right.
It's not like I had a storefront or, I'm going to do a restaurant.
Mm, that's right.
Grand scheme of things, I'm not risky. I'm a safe person.
It's an LLC.
To the point where, I am also someone who I'm not a real big foodie. Food I look at as just like a tool to get me through the day.
Right. You and I both. And it's always funny when we come back from a trip. Wherever we go, and the first thing that Andrew says, where'd you guys eat?
Everybody asks me that.
That's true.
I'd have clients who are food editors and stuff like that, and I just have to pretend that I am like them.
Oh, yeah.
But I am not like them. So if I find something that works for me, especially for breakfast, because I don't like to think too much in the morning,
no,
I will eat the same thing every single day. So I've had a protein shake that I love. I had the whole thing down. I use whey protein. I got the banana. I got the whole thing. And I've been having that every single day.
Every day.
For years.
Years. 365.
No joke. It's
every
great
because I know.
I don't have time to sit down and eat. You know, you move around in the morning.
It's something great. It's quick. Good nutrition. Good protein. Good
I
start.
I have made myself sick from the whey protein, and I am now no longer able to eat whey protein.
No. Your body has rebelled.
Because I'm an idiot and I've eaten the same stupid thing every single day. And you can't, you just can't,
you can't do that.
You really need variety. And I know variety is healthier, but it's hard because then that requires thinking. What do you eat every morning, Andrew? Do you have the same thing?
Yeah. Pretty much I have a coffee for breakfast.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't eat food?
For breakfast, almost never.
When do you eat your first meal?
Pretty much maybe 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
I would be shaking.
I try and eat a slightly earlier lunch.
Yeah.
I found when I'm working, I eat cereal. I have to eat something in the mornings. But in the summertime, a lot of times I will not eat breakfast.
You don't either. Yeah. I get hungry in the morning. Yeah. But I need the protein is the thing.
Gotta have that protein, yeah.
It helps me feel like more full throughout the day, so I don't snack as much.
Right.
So I have been snacking so much recently because I can't
do...
Hey,
you were killing some trail mix this afternoon.
Killed the trail mix, pretty much ruined my dinner. I'm just wondering like now what's the next thing that I'm going to ruin?
What have you been eating every day? Is there anything else?
I will tell you the other thing I've been eating the other day that made me feel sick yesterday that I can't have anymore.
Potato chips?
Cottage cheese.
Oh. No.
Made me feel sick. I felt so sick.
Really?
I even had a little acid reflux.
You just got on that kick.
I know. But it's dairy.
Yeah, and you have a problem with dairy. Oh. Well, I'm not eating that leftover cottage cheese. I can't stand it. Andrew, would you like to take home a tub of cottage cheese?
Just a whiff of cottage cheese makes me
feel cottage cheese has a ton of protein in it.
Wow.
Sure. A ton.
You know what doesn't have a ton of? Good taste.
I like cottage cheese.
Well, that makes one of us in this
it's
room.
It's like kind
of
trendy right now, by the way.
Okay.
It's true. It is. It's a little
great.
Trendy.
So you're the hip one in the room.
I like to be a little trendy.
Look at you. Trendsetter.
But anyway, that's how I've been. Just mundane, ruining myself.
What do you think it's the protein that is what is causing that reaction? Is
it? No, it's the dairy. It's the dairy.
No, I mean the shake. What is it that's causing the reaction?
It's the whey protein. Yeah, because that's milk.
It is?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Whey is in milk.
I had no idea what whey was.
Yeah.
I just learned something.
There's not really a lot of lactose in it, but whatever it is, because I've been drinking it now, because I like it, without the whey protein, and I feel fine.
Mm.
So one of the things is...
Almond milk.
As a snack...
Yeah.
I've got this new yogurt at home.
I like yogurt.
And it's...
Love yogurt.
It's 000 yogurt.
I like a little fat, though.
I can't stand the 000.
I need a little bit of fat.
I think it tastes pretty good.
It does taste good.
I disagree.
But I like it.
I don't like it. It's got no substance to it. I can't stand the 000.
I think it's pretty good. It's not awful.
It's not terrible, but I don't care for it at all. You know what you should do with that whey protein? You should put like a sign on there, wrong whey protein. Maybe you should do something like that.
Well, I have a little bit of the whey protein left, and it is all yours.
I'll eat.
Unfortunately, because I'm going to have to go back to it, I think I might get pea protein, which is a vegetable. It's what vegans use.
How do you spell that?
Not the pea. Yeah. Not the way you're thinking. Yeah.
I think I might have to do that, but I also don't know how healthy that is, because sometimes... You know, some of this stuff, I don't know how good it is.
Yeah. Speaking of trendy, it sounds like something that's just like trendy.
I don't think that's pea trendy.
I hope it's not.
Andrew, how have you been?
So where's the new soundbite?
Oh, yeah. Here we go. I got it ready. How have you been?
Now you're going to use this in your favor.
How you been?
Is he really that busy?
Yeah, busy.
Okay.
Busy.
All right.
So
thank you, Robert Justice.
Yeah, I just don't know why I don't find time in the day for everything. So... I'm going to talk to you today about teenagers.
Oh, man. Andrew, the stories we can share. We shared something with you. We cannot share it.
We won't share that online. Nope.
And so protect the innocent.
Yep.
My son, Dashiell, is a great kid.
He is a great kid. You have three great kids.
He has not seen a bee since elementary school.
Wow.
He drives himself. He is always like the first or second highest grade in every single class.
Mm.
He's in marching band. I mean, he won like academic student of the year of a high school with like 3,000 kids.
Unbelievable. First year at that high school, too. Yeah.
Yep. He had a very smart mother.
Hated the high school and left and,
yeah.
Walked away.
And so, you know, good kid, right?
Yeah.
Now, but he's a teenager and he is what I would call self-centered. Not selfish, self-centered. Mm. He is so focused.
Rising sophomore.
He is so focused, he doesn't see other things. Now, you know, we had planned to go to the Olivia Rodrigo concert tonight, Dash and I, we're going to be hanging out there. We're
all the with all the girls.
11 and 12 year old girls.
Wonderful seats. Wonderful seats. Basically on the floor.
Wow.
Like sixth row.
Whoa! At Red Rocks.
No,
those are
no at Ball Arena.
At Ball Arena.
Yeah, yeah. And we're on the end too.
Those
right?
are not cheap seats.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm thinking, and I've never been to a concert like this. I'm thinking it'll be an experience.
Yeah.
Right. So 3 days ago, Dash was like, what night is that concert? He's like, because his best friend now has a birthday party, a sleepover birthday party tonight.
On a Tuesday night?
Yeah. Tuesday night?
Yeah.
Well, it is summertime. Yeah. It's summertime.
Which is the same night.
Yeah, but what parents want to host a teenage boy sleepover on a Tuesday
that's
night?
That's weird.
So now with a couple days, I basically, so I ask around, like, nobody really wants to go to the concert, right?
Why you tried getting us to go?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's not for me. I've tried.
I don't never heard of her.
You know, if Laura and Sylvie would have gone, I would have given you guys the tickets.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. But
it's Sylvie and I. It's not our. She's not. I don't know why. I feel like she should be. And I've tried over and over to listen to her. I like what she stands for. I like the political activism.
She's got a great voice.
She's stunning. Yeah. It's not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, you know, so I had to sell the tickets. You know, lost like $300 or so selling the tickets. Not to mention the hassle and the stress of wondering whether I'm going to sell the tickets. And then finally, I sell the tickets this morning, go on a Ticketmaster, error, we cannot transfer your tickets. So I try it on my phone, error, we cannot transfer your tickets. So then I'm on a phone call with Ticketmaster for an hour today.
Meanwhile, the person who bought the tickets is probably freaking
transferring, out. Transferring, working to transfer the tickets.
I thought Eddie Vedder blew up Ticketmaster. What happened? Remember Pearl Jam was going to blow him up.
He tried, and then they couldn't. It's an evil empire.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Well, aren't they under a class action lawsuit or government?
There's probably a bunch of them.
I think a government thing.
Yeah, there's probably a bunch of them.
Service fees for that operation?
There's a lot going on. I think they are under some type of government antitrust thing. I don't know.
Right,
I could be making things up.
Oh, there's probably lots of stuff. So I lose $300 on the tickets, not to
at least
the stress,
probably.
Right? And then I had to drop him off tonight, basically at the birthday party. Then I got to pick him up there tomorrow morning, right? And, it's halfway across town, but I had to miss out on my daughter's birthday dinner tonight.
Oh, you're kidding me!
Yeah, just because I basically had to take this
because you had to do the podcast.
Oh man, I think what he's trying to say, the subtext there is because
did you really miss it?
Yeah.
You didn't have to do the podcast tonight.
No, it's not the podcast. It's the fact that I had to like take him all the way across town, and I'm already here.
Oh, right. Across town is here.
He couldn't. Yeah, he was up here, so he wouldn't. He would have to go back for 5 minutes and then come back here.
To get Dashiell?
Yeah. And I just drove to Littleton.
Birthday.
So at 3:30, I drove to Littleton to pick him up from band camp, drove him home.
Oh, I understand.
Drove back to Littleton.
Okay.
And right? It's a half an hour to your house from here.
Yeah, each way, you know, plus it's traffic. I mean, like, that time of day, there's also traffic. So it's just like, but he is completely oblivious, like, to the impact he's having. And this,
that's a teenager.
That is a teenager.
And this is going to be.
That's a real typical
teenager.
Wait,
he didn't write you a handwritten letter of apology?
I feel like
for missing
the
concert?
He really should have.
No.
Like, in calligraphy, at least.
And I did. So it's funny, as I had a conversation.
Dearest father.
I had a conversation with this week, and he admitted, yeah, Dad, I think you're a bit of an asshole.
Oh.
Right?
Whoa. Breaking news whenever it feels like breaking.
Wow.
Yeah. What?
Well, and the thing is, I may have encouraged the honesty. He's like, yeah, Dad, you're a bit of an asshole.
I'm
like,
so you were probing.
Probing.
And
I'm like, nothing
never do
good
that with
happens.
A teenager.
Oh, my goodness.
Why would you do
okay,
that?
Andrew, I'm going to tell you. Oh. My feelings have been hurt so much through the years by me
asking,
probing.
Yeah.
Well, and so the thing is.
And sometimes I think they'll tell you something that's kind of mean. Just to get you off their back.
Yeah. And so
I won't even ask Sylvia what she thinks of my t-shirt.
Yeah.
No, I've learned. You learn.
Yeah. Well, like I said, teenagers. But part of it is, like I told him, I said, Dashiell, you think that because I tell you things you don't want to hear.
That is true.
No, 100%.
That is true.
But it's, you know, it's part of a parent. And I will tell you, all my kids.
So hard.
Even when my spoiled daughter was growing up as a toddler, I used to tell her no 100 times.
Yeah.
Just so she would hear it from somebody. Seriously, I would say no, and I would do it like 100 times just so she would get used to hearing it, right? Because I didn't want.
Yeah, I guess you didn't practice that with Peter.
Well, here's the problem
with the animatronics.
Here's the problem. So we tried timeouts with Peter. We tried disciplining Peter.
Yeah.
Do you know what Peter's reaction was?
He probably was happy about it.
He would make himself throw up. It would make wow. him physically,
really?
Physically sick.
Yeah, Peter wow. is a different cat.
So the way he's wired,
he operates on a whole different level.
The way he's wired, it's like, well, I'm not putting him in timeout.
That's how you end up with a basement full of animatronics.
That's true. This is true.
Work.
Yeah,
we can't have him vomit again. Get him the Gorgon.
Because wow. Dash, we did timeouts. I mean, wonderful. Second kid comes along, you know. Timeout.
Yeah, out the window.
Timeout. Yep. It's like, okay.
Didn't work. Yeah.
That's why we stopped at one.
Let's make a U-turn here.
Yeah. yeah. It's hard. It is so yeah. hard. And, you know, ours is going to college soon. 3 weeks. Mm.
3 weeks.
And I'm telling you, it's still hard.
Yep.
And you think, oh, congratulations, parents. You're done. And it's like, you're never done.
Nope.
You're never, ever done.
Never done. A great conversation this evening.
Well,
congratulations to anyone listening with a new baby.
Sorry.
It'll be interesting. I wonder what stories we're going to have this fall.
Never end.
Well, some of them I hope I don't know.
Speaking of stories, got a great guest for you this week, Marion Keyes. Let me tell you a little bit about her new book, My Favorite Mistake. So this is another fun novel featuring the Walsh family. This one centers on 40-something-year-old Anna. Now, Anna seems to have it all. Good job working at a PR firm in New York City and a boyfriend who seems to, as they say on Love Island, check all the boxes.
Oh, tick. And they say tick.
They do say tick all the boxes.
Such a pet peeve.
All the time. Yeah. Can't stand it. But COVID has forced Anna to question the direction her life seems to be going, and she decides to do a complete 180. She quits her job, leaves her boyfriend, and moves back to her hometown in Ireland near her family, and it is here where she runs into a guy named Joey, with whom she shared a tumultuous past, but perhaps he has changed. Perhaps she has changed. This book is a book about relationships, both family and romantical, as they also say.
Romantical.
A sprawling cast of characters that you really get to know and enjoy. Very funny book as well. As is Marion. Very funny. And I think you'll enjoy this conversation. So here now talking about her book, My Favorite Mistake. This is Marion Keyes.
My sister lives in New York. I know a lot of Americans. I know that an awful lot of you are very, very bright. And that you know that other countries exist.
Yeah, my wife and I, we actually took a trip to Dublin and Ireland about 5 years ago. Beautiful. We were in Northern Ireland. There was some underground cave we went to, and just exploring all the old castle. You don't get the history here in America. You don't get old castles on the side of the road where you give a guy some money and you get to go explore. It's it's delightful.
Well, I'm really, really glad you had a nice time. I have also been to Colorado, but not to Littleton. That's your town, is
Littleton,
it?
Littleton, yeah, just south of Denver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I've been to Denver and I've been to Boulder. I love them both.
Boulder,
very different, yeah, very different cities.
Definitely, definitely. In Boulder, we have an 18-year-old daughter. She's going to University of Colorado in Boulder next year, which just gives me an excuse to go visit that city. The most beautiful city.
It's a really cool place, isn't it?
It is.
That was my experience of it.
Yeah.
Very nice people.
The People's Republic of Boulder.
Boulder. Love it.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of loving things, Marion, how much did I love your new book? You see what I did there? Do you like that transition? Thank you.
It's beautiful.
See,
it's flawless. Flawless, Dave.
My Favorite Mistake. This is a tale of healthcare products and beach shortcuts. Marion, what was it that inspired you to come back and revisit the Walsh family once again?
I mean, I write all my books for myself. Fundamentally,
How selfish of you!
It works. I think. For any writer, you've got to pretend that nobody's going to read it.
I agree.
Because it's the only way that any writer can be kind of truly honest. If we're already kind of flinching and bracing ourselves against criticism and against, harsh opinion, we're just going to sanitize it all. But I had planned to write an entirely different book, a kind of an ambitious 40-year. Terrible people prospering sort of thing. And this next thing, Russia invaded Ukraine. And I just thought, I can't. Yeah. The world is too terrible. Right. I can't spend 2 years, which is how long it takes me to write a book. I can't spend 2 years with terrible people, with the world around me so terrible. Right. So I thought, I'm going to go back into characters that I already know and love and care about. And I'm going to write a love story, because that's what I was reading an awful lot of. I just wanted, you know, people complain that love stories, or crime is another thing I love, that they're formulaic. But at the time, formulaic was all I could cope with. Right. I didn't want to read something where things went horribly wrong for my subjects, and I didn't know if it would work out. I mean, I think it definitely my favorite mistake was it was kind of my response to the horribly uncertain times that we had been living in and continue to be living in. And I also wanted to write a love story about a woman who was not in her 20s or even in her 30s, because of the age I am, I realize, which is 61 almost, I realized that people stay keen for connection, you know, prone to falling in love, that we, you know, we don't age out of these things. And I thought, I want to give women like me a voice. And I also wanted to create a community which was almost like a microcosm of the real world, in that, like, it's a very nosy, small community on the west coast of Ireland, which happens to be geographically very beautiful, you know, financially not so well aspected. And that, you know, that was where I wanted to spend my time. And another thing, I don't know how it is. I'd imagine it's the same in the US as it is here in Europe. But menopause is something that has, we can say the word out loud now without being struck by lightning, you know, or just disappearing in a puff of foul smelling smoke.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be about a woman who was, you know, going through menopause, but it's not a book about menopause. It's just kind of saying, yeah, it happens. It happens actually to, you know, 50% of the population over their lifetime. And it's not such a scary thing.
No. Yeah.
But it's better if we all acknowledge it. Uh-huh.
And there doesn't have to be
those are kind of the things.
Yeah. There doesn't have to be a big production about it. It just is. It's a part of life, you know. This is a menopause book. No, nothing like that. Right. It's just part of our human existence, or a woman's human existence.
Yes. And I mean, as I said, my sister lives in New York, and she's an oncology nurse. And my experience of medicine in the US is like, basically, doctors will give you anything, you know, anything. You're paying for it. Like, you're paying for their time. They will give you anything. Whereas on this part of the world, you know, it is entirely different, you know, especially for women. Our healthcare, we're very much infantilized with physicians. Mm-hmm. You know, they think, No. You have no need for epidurals when you're going through labor. You know, it's a simply natural thing. Like, babies have been born since the dawn of time. You know, you'll be fine. You have your gas and air, you'll be fine. And the same thing with menopause. You know, the amount of women that I know who have had to kind of plead for HRT. And so I thought, let's talk a little bit about that as well.
You know, we also traveled far and wide since the dawn of time, nomadic tribes. But now we have cars, and it's okay to use cars, you know?
Yes. Well, yeah, our antibiotics are such wonderful things. Yeah. You know, I think I'd just rather die of measles, actually. No, it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. Give me some smallpox. So inject the smallpox right into my brain, in fact. It's fine. Yeah.
Exactly. Because it's natural. It's what the human beings have always done. Yeah. So those were kind of my various motivations. But mostly I wrote it to provide comfort to myself and comfort for readers. And I mean, it does touch on stuff. Because it's a love story between people, one is in their 50s and my main character is in her late 40s. Mm-hmm. It's about all the fact that you can't come to any relationship at that stage of your life without having accumulated a fair amount of shame.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a difference between toxic shame, which we're not responsible for, but kind of, I speak mostly for myself, but like, I have done things that if I could time travel, I would not do them. You know, I know better now. Yeah. So I try to do better, but it's like that awful thing when I bump into somebody I was in college with, or, and like, there's all that, oh my God, I've changed so much. Don't judge me. It's about midlife shame.
Yeah. Isn't it great when you have to...
You can't really get rid of it.
No, you can't. It's always great when you meet someone from the past, and then the first thing you have to do is, in your mind, you have to go back and think, okay, what horrible, terrible things have I said to this person, you know, and then decide whether or not you bring it up or just, you know, glide on past it.
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing.
Yes, and
awful.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just wanted to write a book about flawed human beings, like, yeah, doing their best, and the fact that nobody can be perfect.
Right.
And that there is an awful lot of stuff that we simply have to coexist with.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in AA, I'm in recovery, and like, we have this wonderful thing where we make amends. But it's not always possible to do so because the people have long fled the coop. And, you know, so I'm still brought face to face with stuff I've done. And it is so... it's so hard, but it's so normal.
Right.
That's kind of what I've learned. You don't have to be an alcoholic, an addict, or an addict to have accumulated awful stuff. People just do things because we were scared, or we were selfish, or we were greedy, or we were bored. And because fundamentally we're human. Mm. And so I was really hoping that people would feel kind of self-forgiveness.
Right.
Having read My Favorite Mistake, as well as maybe forgiving people who had wronged them as well. I mean, I am a prize-winning grudge holder. Like, I mean, this is always a challenge for me to forgive. But it kind of looks at all of those things, at the terrible things we do to the people we love.
Yeah.
Not because we're bad, or, you know, psychopaths or sociopaths or narcissists or whatever the favorite word of the day is, but simply because we are animals who are trying to survive,
right,
to stay warm, to stay fed, to stay safe, to stay loved.
Right. Well, as a fellow alcoholic myself, recovering alcoholic.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. I agree wholeheartedly with
that. Sorry, we're getting excited.
That's right. Yeah. We like to hold on to things, though, don't we? It's hard to let things go for us.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but there are reasons. I mean, you know, we won't get too much into it. But like, mm-hmm, I think anyone who ever kind of develops an addiction, it's as a result of wounds. Yeah. You know, early right, formed wounds. And I don't know, holding on to grudges was just my way of trying to control the world. It's like,
right,
okay, this person can't be trusted, and that right, person can't be trusted, mm-hmm, because they hurt me and they hurt me. And it's also a result of feeling very, very powerless, you know, thinking, okay, I am powerless now, but I will not be powerless forever. And when I have my power, I still remember you and I will come for you. And I mean, obviously I don't, but those, I understand my impulses now. I don't have to act on them, but they are kind of, they're there.
They're there, and they're not going to go away. And as long as you can acknowledge that they're there and get through that, that's the important thing.
Yes.
But it sounds like you...
I have to say, I'm just really excited. I went to meetings in Denver.
Oh, really?
I was I was there for work, and it was a long time ago.
How about
this,
that?
But this is just, I find this really lovely, Dave. Thank you.
That's great. Absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. There's some really good meetings in Denver. A lot of good people out here. A lot of addictions out here, a lot of problems. But, you know, we do our best to get by. It sounds like you get really affected by what you write, having decided to write this book as like comfort food for you. Is that, do you have a hard time, like, when you write something that's difficult or tough to deal with, disassociating yourself from that then?
No, I mean, this is going to sound like a lot of the time with, I mean, this is my 16th novel, and until now, I've never made that decision before.
Really?
to write something that was deliberately comforting, because I've written about addiction, I've written about domestic abuse, I've written about the loss of a child, and most of the time I need to be very detached when I'm writing.
Uh-huh.
Because I can't write accurately if I'm not.
Right.
This was the first book that I made that decision that the world is just too horrendous right now. And I knew I wouldn't be able to write the other book that I had planned. And it, since then, it has only got worse for me. Like, I stopped reading the news and watching the news. And I know it sounds really irresponsible.
No, but you can't. I can't watch it.
To like, save my head, yeah, you know, from going around the bend.
We're terrified until November. So I know, we are absolutely terrified.
Oh my God, I know. I know. Despite my news blackout, obviously.
You can't escape it. No, you can't escape it. Yeah. And I find myself just Googling Trump over and over again and reading everything I can about it, even though it's no good for me and there's nothing I can do about it. But you can't escape it. And it just it burns you up inside. It's terrible. So thank you for...
It is really, really frightening. No, and like, obviously, the rest of the world feels for you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And there's nothing else that can be said,
we
really.
Might, no, there isn't. We might be on the right track now. We'll see. Hopefully, Kamala can pull it off.
Yes.
But that's why I love reading. I love to escape reality. And your book is just so fun. It's so funny. It's delightful. It's hilarious. I slap my knee many times. None more harder than reading about this. Listen, tell me, you got to talk to me a little bit about this feathery stroker. What the hell is the goal? What is it? Okay. What is this feathery stroker? Hilarious. A description of a man. Tell me, talk to us a little bit about these feathery strokers.
Okay. Feathery strokers came of age, like really, I think it was about 2004. My sister Katrina, who lives in New York, and her friend Anne Marie, one of them, I can't remember which one of them, they'd gone on a date with some man. Uh-huh. And she came home the next day, whichever one it was, and complained that, like, instead of like flinging her around the bed and, you know, maybe tearing, you know, her, you know, maybe her bra or something like that, sure, he was like really gentle and really respectful and, you know, very, very now, you know, and like asked her consent and like just all night, like stroked her in this like feathery way. And whichever one it was like really disappointed that this was not what they had signed up for, like that they wanted passion and they wanted drama and they wanted like physical activity and so
bodice
it started as a man who was like, you know, respectful in bed, and it just gathered force, and then it became like a man who was kind to his mother, and then a man who did Pilates. I mean, this was a long time ago. You know, now all men can do Pilates and nobody judges, you know.
No.
Or a man who noticed you'd got your hair cut, or a man who would eat a strawberry cheesecake, low-fat yogurt, you know, kind of anything that was in any way unmacho. That's, you know, and the kind of the antithesis then of a feathery stroker would be a man who would like pile drive you into a headboard. So I suppose a headboard pile driver. But you see, things have changed. I mean, that was like two decades ago, more. And now like feathery strokers are like on the money. That's what everybody wants.
Sure. Yeah, it is.
Well,
yeah,
in theory anyway. You know, I do think time has been kind to feathery strokers. Mm-hmm. But it's still one of the great, like, I always thank Katrina and Anne-Marie. In, I've mentioned it in a couple of books because it's not mine. I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. And I am glad that feathery strokers are having their day, having a moment.
That's it. Yeah, good for them. Yeah, good for them. We're all pleased for all the feathery strokers out there. When you, do you like tuck that? Do you have like a file where you keep like fun notes like that in, or do you just tuck them away in a different part of your brain and for use in novels later? How does that work? Are you always on the lookout for stuff?
I don't have a notebook. I mean, I always give advice to other writers, you know, to carry a notebook or like have your phone app, your notes app on your phone. But like, I kind of think there's something creepy about that. I don't know. You're having a conversation with somebody and they say something interesting or gas. Like, hold on a second. Hold that thought.
Whoa.
It's just, intrusive and weird. But I think because of the kind of child I was, because I was trying to figure out the world, I was constantly paying attention. I was always alert and always, what's the word?
Attuned.
Trying to get cues from other people of how to be. So I think I'm still very, very analytical when I'm with people.
Okay.
And so it all goes in it's some scary room in my head where like all the impressions I formed of people are if they do say something funny or unusual, that all goes in. And it does come out in bits and pieces when I'm writing, which I'm very grateful for. I mean, I really, although, you know, I don't know about you, but like COVID really impacted my memory. I think I am going to have to carry a notebook around and then run the risk of never being invited anywhere. You're the weird one with the notebook. Go away.
She's judging and she's writing down everything we say.
Yeah. Don't put me in your book.
COVID was, I got the long COVID and it got in the lungs and I'm a runner and so I had to like have an inhaler. I can still run and everything, but it definitely messed with your mind. And I didn't even get any good hobbies out of COVID. I know your character, Anna, she bought a loom and got into weaving. Did you get into any fun COVID related hobbies?
Funny enough, I started running.
Look at that. Awesome.
Because, we couldn't leave our houses. So, I had a treadmill. So, I started running. I mean, I had to run. It's probably nothing to you because you're a runner. But I had to run 8 kilometers a day or I would have lost my reason.
That's great.
It saved my life.
That's awesome.
I didn't start baking banana bread, which is what everybody here did. I ate an awful lot. I ate and I ran. And I worked because that was really nice to have something to say because I couldn't read. The fear was so bad I couldn't concentrate.
It was hard to concentrate. Time. Yeah.
Are you able to run now?
Oh yeah.
Oh, thank God, you're better.
I'm probably. It was like a couple months where it really affected me, but I'm all better. And I had some delightful runs in Ireland. I wish I could remember. My wife is usually here with me, but she's a little under the weather.
Is Laura your wife?
Yeah, Laura's my wife. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Usually it's the two of us, but she's a little sick herself. But we got a new puppy, and we have not been sleeping at all, so we're both like sick. But yeah, I had some great runs in Ireland. I can't remember. We're like right in the middle of the country somewhere. I don't know. Some delightful runs in Ireland.
I'm so glad. The names don't matter. Yeah. I'm just so happy you had a good time here.
We did. It's so green. You know, out here, everything's brown and dry. And it's great. You know, we love not having the rain. But everything was, and we had great weather when we were there.
Oh, yes. Lovely.
Yes, indeed. Listen, I loved your description of Anna. So at one point in the book, Anna is in the car. She's taking a car trip and she's listening to an audio book. And you described it as, quote, "Keeping me company was a disembodied woman with a cut glass accent reading a Barbara Vine novel." It's just literally just the greatest description of someone listening to an audiobook I've ever heard. I love audiobooks. Are you a big audiobook fan?
Massive. I have trouble sleeping. And so I listen to audiobooks at night. And they kind of soothe me back to sleep. But it means that I have to keep kind of thinking, oh, where did I fall asleep?
I know. I can't listen to them. I would have to listen to a podcast and then put on a timer. I'm afraid I'm going to miss something. Do you like put on a little sleep timer on it? Or do you do
No. I'm so afraid. I'm so terrified of scaring sleep away that I don't want to start measuring it. I just want to kind of, because when I start listening to the book, I don't need to fall asleep. I'm just going to lie here and listen to the lovely voice. And the voice is so important to me.
Yeah.
You know, if a person has the wrong voice, I can't buy the book.
Right.
Me listening to audible samples is a vital part of my life. And I know the ones that will work for me. Really? And the ones who will just drive me insane. Anybody with any kind of vocal fry, no way. Not a hope. Go away. it's a very personal thing.
It is. You're spending so many hours with that person. Now, do you speed it up? Do you speed it up or do you listen to it at you can't listen to it. You got to speed it up, right?
No, I like it at the pace it is. I mean, I know the speeding it up seems kind of very modern. It seems very kind of young. I think I'm okay. I like things at normal pace.
Okay.
It kind of makes me sad when people speed watch TV series. It's like,
I agree with that. Yeah.
You know, it's not about consuming stuff. It's about calming down. I don't need to know it that badly. I just want to be part of the experience. But that's just me. And works for anyone. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying I don't like it.
I usually put it at 1.4 because I feel like, especially what I've noticed is American readers will read very slowly because, you know, like we've established, we're dumb over here. And so we need people to read slow. Give me a good British. I love the British narrators. I've read all the Ken Bruin, Jack Taylor books with the Irish guy who does all those. And he's so good. I love his stuff. And Simon Brett, I don't know if you're familiar with Simon Brett.
No.
He does these
mysteries. But I have a great recommendation if you'd like.
Oh, please hit me. Yes.
Okay. There's a writer called Anthony Horowitz.
Yes, we've talked to him a couple of times. He's so funny.
Oh my God, I love him. Yes. But you know that he's written these adult books now.
Yes. The Anthony
and
Horowitz.
They're about him. He's in them. It's very meta. And a detective called Hawthorne. But it's narrated by an English actor called Rory Kinnear. And he is spectacular. Have you had the pleasure of listening?
I've listened to all of them. Yes, they're great.
No.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I'm just coming to the end of book four at the moment. And there's only one left. And I am so panicky because he's amazing. Like, he's an amazing narrator, whatever the word is.
Yeah, he's so good. Yeah. No, I love those books. And we've talked to him a couple of times, and not Rory Kinnear. I'd love to talk to Rory Kinnear, but I don't know.
Can I tell you something? This is really weird. Yeah. You see, I mean, I do the audiobooks of my books for the last couple of books.
Oh, and, really? Look at you.
Yeah, it's only a recent thing. But I was in the Penguin Random House, like audio suite, recording my favorite mistake. And this man passed me in the hallway, you know, in the list. He's really familiar. I thought, where do I know him from? And usually when I think that, I think it's from, you know, it's usually from AA, but it wasn't. I don't know, yeah. And then later I went home and I go, oh my God, that was Rory Kinnear from like The Diplomat and other things. And then he was actually in recording the fifth of the Hawthorne books at the same time as me.
Wow.
So it was a really kind of gorgeous, starstruck, I don't know, juxtaposition. It was lovely.
You're in for a treat with the fifth one. The structure is a little different. It's a little different, is all I'll say, but it's just as delightful as all of them. Yeah, he's so good. He's so good.
Mm-hmm. He is.
Yeah.
This is great.
Now, listen, in your book, Anna, she works in public relations. I can't imagine, or she starts out the novel working in public relations for these beauty care products. I can't imagine a worst possible job, but I'm wondering, you are very successful at your craft as a writer. So successful, I guess, that now you get to narrate. You know, it really means that you've made it when they let you narrate your own book. So congratulations.
Okay. I didn't know.
I think so.
Thank you.
I mean, don't you think? Come on. I mean, yeah, definitely. But what? So if you weren't a successful writer, you know, what do you think you would you'd be doing?
I mean, I kind of cycle through artistic obsessions. Mm-hmm. You know, for a while I upcycled furniture. Then, I used to bake and decorate cakes. I used to knit.
Oh,
I painted like enormous, you know, canvases like covered in oil. At the moment, I'm doing an interiors design course. Now, I know that your wife
is
an interiors designer. Yeah, and I am utterly, because I can't do things like a normal person. I'm like, I am either like completely not interested or utterly obsessed, like fixated.
That's kind of where I am at the moment.
I moved house 3 months ago and we left most of our furniture behind. The people who bought the house wanted it. So now I'm in this like, all I can think or talk about is like swatches, you know, pieces of fabric, wallpaper, you know. Are you going to show me something?
Yeah. Sure, we got some.
All kinds of swatches, the RAL colors.
Wait a second. There we go. Yeah.
Beautiful. I love it. I absolutely adore it. Yeah, like that's what I would love, you know. I have a young friend who does a lot of manifesting. And so at the new moon, she persuaded me to manifest. So I manifested that like some really rich people would buy a 16-bedroomed nunnery in some beautiful part of Ireland and decide to convert it into like this incredibly luxury hotel. And they would employ me and just give me a limitless budget to do up the bedrooms. That's where I am, Dave. That's
fantastic.
How bad things have got. Manifesting nunneries. And unlimited budgets.
Manifesting at the new moon, no less. Goodness gracious. Wow. I don't know. That's, yeah.
But it'll pass this time next year. This time next year.
It'll be something else.
It'll be something else.
You'll be getting I thought, so I'm a teacher and I have my summers off. So at the beginning of the summer, I bought a unicycle. I'm like, I'm going to get
a unicycle. Wow.
It lasted Not well. I spent about two-hour sessions up at the park, clutching a fence, trying to hold on to it. It was the worst. No, I haven't. I got it. It's sitting in my garage right now. I got to get it. I got to get it back out there.
No, I love that you do this. I absolutely love.
Oh, you got to.
You
right?
know. Yeah. You wanted to try it. You're trying it. You're doing it. I mean, that's what life is about.
It is. All right. Marion, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six.
Okay.
These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
The last show. I watch a lot of Swedish TV or like Scandinavian TV. So there's a thing called A Nearly Normal Family. It's in Swedish. It's about a murder, a family. God, they're dysfunctional. I loved it.
Oh, that sounds great. Someone else was just talking to us about that show. Another writer. I can't remember who, but sounds good. How about this? What fictional world or place would you like to visit? And if it's dangerous, don't worry. We'll let you back in.
Okay. I suppose Barbara King Solver's Poisonwood Bible. An amazing book, such a powerful book.
Yeah.
Even though it was, you know, it was a dangerous place.
Oh, sure.
Still,
yeah.
I'd go there.
All the most interesting places are a little dangerous, you know, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You can't have one without the other.
No. How about this, Marion? Give us one of your favorite movies. One of your favorite movies of all time.
Big fan of Wes Anderson. I would go for... The French Dispatch was such fun.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
But any of them, really.
Any of them.
I love them all.
You watch one, you watch them all. I mean, they're so visually striking. I mean, good for someone interested in interior design, for sure.
Yeah.
Such marvels, treasures to look at. How about this? One of your favorite books of all time? A little tougher.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard to... pick one.
You can't just pick one, but give us one.
Barbara Kingsolver's coming to mind again, and I can't.
No, you can't. You can't go back to Kingsolver. Sorry. You gotta lock
all right.
Up.
I mean, Demon Copperhead was just such an incredibly. It's just such. She's a genius.
Yeah.
And she has a social conscience. Okay, I'm picking her.
Okay.
Yeah, that one.
Okay. All right. Very good. How about this, Marion? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Well, yeah, but you would be too young to know this. It's Earth, Wind, and Fire, September.
Of course I know that. I'm 53. Come on, I'm not. I'm no spring chicken.
You look a lot younger.
Okay,
you look a lot younger.
Okay.
Anyway, it's still kind of, you're still a bit too young for it. Yeah, I love disco, Anna. I love autumn. We have seasons here. The 1st of September is like, thanks be to God, the heat of the summer is over, which is a joke in Ireland, of course. But still, I love autumn. Autumn is my time. September is my month. It's my birthday month. And September is my song.
That's a great song.
You know, if I could time travel, myself and my husband would be, you know, backing musicians in Earth, Wind, and Fire in 1976.
Well, you know where you'd be. You'd be right here in Denver because they went to East High School where I teach. They're alumni of the high school that I teach at. Yes, yes. It's
Maurice!
True. Yes!
Oh, my God!
Yes.
Stop! Okay.
Yep, no lie. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I wouldn't do that. All right, and finally, what book are you currently reading?
I'm reading Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, and I can't believe it's taken me this long.
Yeah.
But I am, as you said earlier, I am stubborn. I'm full of character flaws. And if somebody keeps saying to me, you have to read it, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, I won't read it.
Nope. I don't have to read anything. I'll make my own mind up. Thank you. Anyway, I got over that. I'm reading it. It's just so lovely.
Good. Yeah, it's a great book. And I'm the same way. Don't, please stop telling me, it's so you. It's so you. You
that's
know?
The worst bit. Yes.
Get out of here with that.
You don't know me. I am a complex, unique person. Don't you dare.
Oh, well, Marion Tees, it's been delightful chatting with you. Loved your book, My Favorite Mistake, and Have yourself a wonderful day out there in, or I guess it's evening where you are, isn't it? I guess
no, it's afternoon. Afternoon. It's okay. Half past three in the afternoon.
All right, very good. Yeah. So you've got some time to get out there and do something with it.
Enjoy that rain.
There you go.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. It was an absolute pleasure. It really, really, really was. Thank you for having
me. Very nice. Of course. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye. All right, thank you so much to Marion Keys for hopping on. Check out that book, My Favorite Mistake, and let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
reviews.
Let's start with
Laura Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon, Golden Rule, private school, never miss on a church.
All right, what do you got for us this week?
I have a book called Four Winds by Kristen Hannah.
Four Winds
by Kristen Hannah.
Oh, that's right, yes.
So this book has been recommended to me for years by clients and friends, and I finally, put it on hold and got out of the library. Mm-hmm. So Dave can attest to this. This is true. I often cried throughout this book. And despite that, I absolutely loved it. I'm not a person who enjoys
A lot more on than off with the crying.
I don't like to cry necessarily. I cry enough in real life. I don't need to watch a movie that's going to make me cry. I don't want a tearjerker book. That's not necessarily my cup of tea.
Right.
This book was amazing, though. I think this might be my favorite Kristen Hannah book
A lot.
Which is saying a lot because her books are amazing. And she wrote The Women this year, which I read about the Vietnam War, which was unbelievably good. Mm. I think this one's my favorite. So this book is set during the Dust Bowl in the Great Depression, and it takes place in Texas and in California, and it is dark. It is Dave Medicus style.
Oh, I love
dark.
The dark.
So dark. And it's especially dark when all I thought about was this might be our future if we don't get a handle on our environment.
Man.
I mean, it was 99 degrees here in Denver today. We have two fires that popped up.
Raging out of control.
That are very close to they're in the Front Range. They're not far away.
Yep.
And then Nine News, hopefully. So Denver has been hit by the smoke from the Canadian Rocky fires, right? And then now today we have two fires that are burning at 0% contained last time I checked in the Front Range. Mm. Nine News, hopefully, on their website posted, wildfire smoke will cause dementia, will increase your chances of dementia. It's do you really need to pile on?
I know. There's nothing we can do about it.
More days of 90 plus degree heat. Mm-hmm. No rain in sight. Anyway, so this... the Dust Bowl, the Great Depression, this actually happened during my grandparents' time. So it's a few generations away.
Yep.
My grandfather was older. He was born in, I think, 1901, something like that. I know my grandmother was a teenager, I think, in the roaring 20s. So they definitely experienced hard times, I'm sure, in the Depression. And I've seen, the Dorothea Lange photos.
The famous.
From that era. There's a real famous one with a Dust Bowl woman.
The woman with the kid,
Yeah.
That is a famous one.
But I've never really understood what happened, and this book really lays it all out there. So you follow a young woman named Elsa. We meet her in a small Texas town when times are good, so you understand what is going on when times are good.
Yeah.
And the women have enough things to buy for clothes. They don't have to always work in the fields. They can afford candy and sweets and plenty of food for their kids. School is good. Just great time. It's like living now if you're middle class, upper middle class, maybe. And then it stops raining. And in addition to it stopping to rain, it gets incredibly hot. We're talking 90s in March down there.
Wow, really?
And no rain. Mm. No rain at all. And it just sounds so familiar. So what I didn't really understand, I knew, Dust Bowl, it's bad. I didn't really understand how bad it got.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand the dust storms and maybe what it might be like experiencing a dust storm. I didn't also understand why would you stay on dead land, And so I feel I was able to understand that a little bit better from this book. And then Elsa takes her kids on a very risky journey to California, where it's the land of milk and honey. You got to go. It's opportunity. They're shunned there because they're immigrants. And they're called Okies.
People moving out there.
In California, they tried to close their borders. So they tried to close their borders to people fleeing the Dust Bowl.
Wow, really?
They refused to serve them in hospitals. They turned them away. We don't serve your kind. They treated them like animals, except really worse than an animal. Yeah. You wouldn't treat an animal that way. So they became migrant workers. They were, living on the side of the road in camps. They were starving. They were taking any terrible job they could get. They were picking cotton. They were lining up in the early hours because they had so many migrant workers there, but not enough jobs.
Right, yeah.
And then they were basically enforced into gang labor. There was no unions at this time.
Man.
They had no rights. They were kind of enslaved with something that they would use as credit. So we'll give you credit.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I've heard that in our future with the climate change that we're experiencing right now, that states in the future, I don't know if it'll be our lifetime, might be our kids' lifetime, that states might try to do this as well. They'll close borders to people fleeing from other states. I've heard that, Twin Cities, St. Paul?
Yeah.
That they're preparing for an influx. Oh,
because everyone's going to want to come up north, yeah.
They're going to come north and center towards the Great Lakes is what they're anticipating. So cities like that are preparing for climate migration, which is nice, but at the same time, it's a little scary. So reading this book just felt like a harbinger, even though it is a look back book. It's a very moving story, very entertaining page turner about one woman's attempt to survive with her children during this really intense time and place in America. People always like, oh, it was better back then. Oh, everything was better. Like, where would you time travel to live if you they think today is so bad. Today is pretty good. Like,
right,
you can go get your teeth fixed, pulled. You have no, like, it's pretty good right now. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know we complain a lot.
Right.
We have an election coming up. Both sides are divided and at each other's throats. It's still pretty good compared to what it was. So America in the 30s, it was a dystopia. I mean, I had no idea. I should have never thought about it.
So I've talked to people firsthand who lived through the Depression.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And the average life expectancy of Americans actually increased during the Great Depression.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Well, I mean,
drinking and smoking? Couldn't afford it?
Well, I mean, couldn't afford
that's the
alcohol.
Question. That's the question. But a lot of people I talk to, they had good times during the Depression.
Oh, it depends on where you were living in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Texas, and it's not even every place in those places, just certain areas. Even Colorado had some trouble because some people would migrate into just to another area in their own state. Like in Colorado, they had the dust storm hit our eastern front. So people would come into the Denver, into more lush environments.
So you really do have to look at it regionally.
It's regional. It's very regional. Yeah. And she drove through, what is that, desert out there to get to California. And California, it was green. It was, they had massive growers. Beautiful. Like they said, land and milk and honey, but they did not want, they called them Okies is what they called them. They didn't want them. Very interesting.
Wow. Sounds like a fascinating read.
It's so good. It is sad.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire book, it is sad.
Well, yeah, I remember you would be sitting there on the couch, and I would turn to you, say something about the Olympics or whatever. You're like, not now, I'm crying.
Oh, okay. You were like, all right. I don't know, should we watch the blah, blah, blah next? And I'm like, I'm in the crucial part of my book.
Yeah, I got the women's rugby queued up. You ready? No.
Yeah, I don't sound like that.
I know.
Okay, four wins, Kristen Hannah. It's incredible.
I think I did the exact same impression for my mother as I just did.
I know. You. It's okay. It's all right.
All right. Well, that's recommended by
Laura Medicus.
And then my book,
Dave Medicus.
This week,
it's a bonfire. Turn the lights out. I'm burning everything you must.
Is now, listen, I never read. Now, this guy, this writer, I know he's one of the most popular writers out there. Everyone knows him. If you're listening, you've probably read one of his books. I never read a Michael Connelly book. So I decided to go back. What's all the fuss? What's all the hullabaloo about this guy, Michael Connelly?
Very popular.
Very, very popular. I picked up his first, he writes the Bosch books.
I feel like it's
Bosch.
Like saying you have never read a John Grisham or
probably a Grisham.
Maybe not Grisham anymore, but.
No.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I went back. I grabbed maybe a Michael Crichton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
you
maybe.
You know, kind of deal.
Yeah.
This one is from 1992. It's his very first book. It does feature Detective Harry Bosch. And turns out I was missing all the hullabaloo. I actually absolutely love this book. Found it to be a tense, exciting, cinematic detective story, police procedural about LAPD homicide detective Harry Bosch, and his real name, Hieronymus Bosch. His mother gave him that name.
Really?
Because she loved the painter. So he's 42, which is always interesting when you start out a series, and the series went so long.
Yeah.
He's 42 in the very first book, you know, in the middle, towards the end of his LAPD career.
So you got to slow down the pace, which the years. Which is,
I don't know how he did it, but
or
yeah.
Or you got to pick that, like, they're just going to live at that age-ish.
Right, yeah. I think he does age from a little bit what I was reading. But anyways, 42 with the very first book.
Writers, start your people out young.
Start them out young. He's like a rogue kind of guy. He's the kind of guy who does his own thing, doesn't want to be told what
to
do.
Like a classic.
Like a classic, exactly. He's fresh off of serving a suspension for something he did wrong. He's a rebel cop. He's going to answer to no one. So he is called, and I say that, like, you know, with a certain tone, but I love that.
Love that. I get it.
He's called to a murder scene. A dead body has been discovered in a drain pipe at the Mulholland Dam. And the death appears to be an overdose, but Bosch is convinced otherwise, and a closer inspection of the body reveals that Bosch actually knew the man. It turns out they both served in Vietnam together as tunnel rats. Now, Andrew, do you know what these, I was not familiar with tunnel rats. Do you know what a tunnel rat is?
Absolutely. You have to go into the tunnels. Yeah.
Yeah. So they would go there. They would go on search and destroy missions. So all around, all connecting these villages in Vietnam are tunnels underground that they built to get around. Now, these tunnels were full of grenades, poison gas, traps, snakes. They would, like, tether these venomous snakes in these tunnels.
Good grief.
And these tunnel rats were on search and destroy missions, tunneling through these tunnels. So that's how Bosch knew this, knew the deceased. Of course, Bosch is the only one who thinks that this isn't an overdose, and everyone around him doesn't seem to really care much about doing any police work. In fact, his partner is always complaining when Bosch calls him. He's like, because he's a real estate agent on the side. He's just waiting to retire, and he's like, I got to show some houses in the valley.
I don't know why, but that's really funny.
It is funny, and there is a good amount of humor in this book.
I feel like there's a lot of people that are real estate agents on the side.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I have a client who's a pilot.
What?
For United, but he's like, oh yeah, I sold these other people their house. Because he has a real estate license, so he sells.
Come on.
He represents, like, his friends.
Well, a lot of people think it's a path to riches.
Yeah, it used to be. Yeah.
Well, our next door neighbor is a pilot.
Real estate. Not piloting.
Oh, you mean you think, I see what you're saying.
Because it's easy. You could even, if you're a mountain real estate agent, the joke is, like, you just sell the same home every 5 years over and over and over again.
There's some truth to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bosch, he's in no way a people pleaser. He kind of goes out of his way to speak his mind and irritate everyone just so he can solve the case. He does get a little assistance from the FBI, and so they start pushing it back against him as well. And his investigation takes him to some possible bank thieves, which means, of course, yes, you get some very exciting bank heist action in this book.
Now, I may or may not have watched a season or two.
Oh, did you?
Of the Bosch series.
Oh, you did.
Okay, great.
And I liked it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not your typical thing.
I want to check it out now.
But here's the thing. Bosch is, like, in the series, he seems to cross the line to do his job. Is that the case in the book?
He doesn't necessarily. He plays a little fast and loose with those gray areas, for sure. He does. Yeah. And he smokes everywhere. I mean, come on.
He
was 92 in the
show.
Book, but he smokes all over the place, and everyone's always complaining about his.
Well, you smoked in 1992.
Smoking. Sure, but not when I was working as an LAPD inside. You know.
Oh, inside! I bet they all smoked. Don't you think?
I think so.
Smoking was indoors then.
Well, in the book, everyone's complaining about his. Well, I guess it's just the woman that he's dating that was complaining about it. Anyway, the point is. It's a great book full of interesting characters. This Bosch guy, turns out there's something to him. I'm telling you, Michael Connelly, you might want to write a couple more Bosch books. I think you're on to something here.
Oh, my goodness.
Check out the first one. This is called The Black Echo. And that kind of that refers to the tunnels, The Black Echo.
Interesting.
I'm Michael Connelly. All right, Andrew.
So this book this week may have like one of the longest titles.
So you are famous for choosing, but all your books, they always have like a subtitle, and then you follow it up with book 7 in the blank series.
Yes,
I'm excited to hear this one.
This book has got like 3 different titles. And so it is written by Vasily Mahanenko.
Okay.
Vasily.
I think I'm friends with you on...
Mahanenko.
I'm friends with Andrew on Goodreads, so I think I was looking at that name. Yeah.
So Vasily. I think Vasily. Vasily, yeah.
Oh, it's not Wassily?
Now, this is book... Condemned Book 1.
You're right.
There are 10 books in the series.
Okay.
Now, I'm already reading Book 4.
When I saw it, you were on Book 3, so that's good.
So now I'm on Book 4.
Okay,
good. It happened at dinner tonight.
yeah, sure.
And so this is called... Progression Fantasy Lit RPG, Valenki, Last of the Line.
Wow, you got that, Robert Justice?
Right? I mean, so it is like everything that's going on. Like with
Andrew, you're growing on us.
Yeah, with the title of this book.
There it is. Condemned Book 1, Lord Vilevsky, Last of the Line, Number 1, by Vasily Mahanenko. Yeah. Mahanenko. Is he Hawaiian?
No, I imagine it's an Eastern European name.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and I didn't research him.
Mahalo.
So, and anyways, the main character of this book, and they're like, there's 10 books in the series, right? So I like that.
You do.
And the way this book is written, it is not a rush book. It takes its time with the character development. It takes its time with what's going on. Each book doesn't accomplish accomplishes a few big things, but I really love the pace and the detail of this book.
Well, it's 625 pages, so
was the first book 625?
625.
Yeah, the subsequent ones are shorter.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. That's good.
So
because
it's a lot of words.
Yeah, it's a lot of words.
Yeah. So maybe 5,000-6,000 pages across 10 books. I mean, wow.
That's Andrew's epic. Happy place. Yeah, that's your wheel.
That's right up your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So the main character of this book is a young boy named Maximilian. He is a younger son of a baron, which everybody knows is if you are not the oldest son, you don't inherit, etc. Now, the book opens, and Maximilian is basically in bed with a couple twins.
Oh, no wonder you like
twins.
So I'm reading the book.
I do feel like there might have been a woman on the cover of the first one of them.
Yeah, and I didn't look at the covers much, to be honest.
No? There's a young lad with a spear.
Oh, okay, never mind.
So,
fist.
Yeah, you're thinking of maybe another book that I've read. So, anyways, he's reading the book, and I'm sitting there thinking, my God, I hope this isn't another harem lit, right? I don't like... You know, harem lit. I mean, when these books cross the line, that's got to be one of my biggest pet peeves. They take a good book and they ruin it.
Really?
Yeah, they ruin it with...
I thought you liked the harem lit.
No, I do not like the harem lit.
Okay.
I end up skipping that stuff. And so anyways, unlike Deadpool 3...
Oh
yeah, you saw that
today.
This
book does not cross the line.
No, yeah.
Oh, do they cross the line in Deadpool?
Not only do they cross the line.
Oh yeah, they go well really? Over.
They go back and forth.
Andrew
told
me he was taking Peter and Dashiell. I'm like, you know, it's a hard R.
It's a hard R.
I told my kids,
very hard R.
After watching Deadpool 3, you don't have to do sex ed anymore.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah. Well, you know, Ryan Reynolds is filthy.
He is.
Yeah.
Filthy.
Now, did your kids enjoy it?
No, they did.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I'm not sure I understood everything that was said in that movie.
A lot of references.
And what I say is
true.
I almost wish that I could have
slowed it down.
Streaming it, like could I play it at like 0.75 speed?
Yeah.
Because things were flying so fast and furious in there.
There's a lot going on.
Language and other things. But honestly,
innuendo.
You know, at least for me, I mean, am I getting old because I wanted to slow it down? Did you feel that way?
He talks his quips are fast.
There was a lot. I missed a lot because those quips do come quick and fast, and there's a lot of action going on and a lot of other things flying around.
Yeah.
So your kids didn't turn and ask you any questions after the movie.
There was no time for that in the movie. Good. So anyways, so this book does not cross the line, and it quickly.
Oh, okay.
And other than that opening scene, there isn't a whole lot of that in the book.
Okay.
Right?
He just gets your attention with that scene.
But you know, so Maximian is a young boy. He is likable. He cares. He basically cares for these girls, and he's a younger son. So in a certain sense, he gets ignored. But the family that he grows up in is very strict. And there's a comment in there where once he complained that his instructor was too strict, and he basically got whipped for asking that question. He's like, well, that's the last time. And so his parents are very strict.
Mm.
They raise him. They believe in the old ways, right? But that's just the family that he's raised into. It's not that they're hugely wealthy. It's a minor barony. But that's what he grows up into. So now, of course, Maximilian has to do a rite of passage. And as far as the rite of passage, he has to go out in the wilderness and basically survive an ordeal and make his way back to the barony on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens is it all goes well. And he's like, I know the barony like my back of hand. He's like, this is nothing. So, of course, do things go as planned?
No.
Sure, they go exactly.
They definitely don't.
They don't.
And I'm wondering if some special powers will be found.
Yeah, huh?
Perhaps powers.
Have you read
this? No.
So he's coming back, and
Andrew could really tape his reviews.
I feel like Andrew at this point, because you have a certain thing that you like to read.
Well, it isn't just that, but a lot of fantasy and other books. I mean,
it's just similar.
Well, it's just what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if you've got mundane powers,
yeah, psychological suspense.
Who wants to read that? Nobody wants to read that.
So anyways, Max is coming back, and what should he encounter? But he encounters a half destroyed huge giant monster crab creature.
Ooh, that's funny.
I did not expect
that. Now we're not thinking
you could put some Old Bay on that.
Crab legs here.
I did not expect that.
Think of like
some butter,
dark and infected. Ew. Like if like any piece of this thing comes in contact with you, they're gonna have to burn you.
Oof.
They're going to have to burn you and incinerate you so it doesn't get infected. I mean, think about it, a giant,
like the plague or something,
infected crab. Like, I'm not sure a crab's going to ever taste the same again.
That is nasty.
After reading this book. But Max, with his spear, somehow manages to kill the crab. And then he has to burn all the pieces and he has to burn his clothes.
Ugh.
But does Max gain some magical powers and becomes...
Oh, when he kills the crab?
Does he become a mage when he kills the crab?
King crab?
Yes, he does.
King crab.
So Max goes... back home, he goes back to the barony, and he sees that his barony has been attacked. All of his family members have been beheaded, killed, down to babies, kids, everybody. He is the last member of his family that is alive.
Wow.
And here he is, showed up in his underwear.
Oh, that's probably true.
Because it's the only piece of clothing
that's funny.
He hasn't burned. And so he uses his magic. And so what ends up happening in this world is, ideally, they should... The people that, you know, basically set his family up, it seems like they really want to take over their land. And even in book four, they don't really get, book three, I should say, they haven't really gotten as to why the Duke wanted his family's land. But he clearly wanted the land. And so he wants Max dead. But because Max has magic, he is useful in what they call the Doomed Legion.
Hmm.
Now, the Doomed Legion basically uses magic. And they have to fight these dark creatures, they're called. Right? And so Max...
Are they other crab things?
Well, all kinds of things.
Oh, okay. I mean, you know, okay.
As much imagination as you can have.
Crab Imperial. We have the Crab Imperial Army.
Well, this may have been the only crab type creature they actually talked about.
That's disappointing.
Crab wontons.
Yeah. So anyways...
Well, now you're just being silly.
I'm just thinking.
Yeah. So in any event... let's see here. Let's do a sideways crawl away from the crab metaphor.
Okay. All right.
And so, basically, he's part of the Doomed Legion, where now it's going to be his job. But they're not considered alive. The Doomed Legion is kind of like Game of Thrones. What do they call that when you join when you go to the wall?
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's kind of like that.
Oh yeah.
Except this is the Doomed. Right. It's similar. You know, similar basically to that. So that's where he's going to go. And he ends up, and they realize his magic is extremely powerful. They haven't seen magic like his before. And basically, the first two books, it's always on the fence. Do we kill him because he's a bigger threat? Or does, you know, with his potential that he has, is he's more potential for good, right? Because of where Max his magic is. So he's not like, you know, and Max, of course, he wants to somehow survive so he can basically take revenge, mm-hmm. To basically kill the people that slaughtered, you know, his entire family. And so, you know, this is it's a great book. It's a great series. I mean, I wouldn't say there's a little humor in here, but not a lot of humor. But you know, I'm already reading book four, and these are books. I think the first book was free. I think the books after that you have to pay for. You know, so I'm actually paying for these books,
that's,
and I'm happy.
You know, it's good,
and I'm basically happy to pay for these books. But you know, I'm on book four, and I'm sure by the end of the week I'll already be on book five. But the book is Condemned, Book One, by Vasily Mahonenko. Lord, I won't even say the last part, but you'll find the title. Thank God we're posting it.
All right, and that brings us right up to the
audiobook of the week.
And my pick this week is The Knicks, a novel by Nathan Hill, narrated by Ari Fliakos. Listen, I absolutely love this book from 2016. It's a long one. This is
long book.
This is 21 hours and 42 minutes long.
Woo.
And I did love some storylines more than others, but overall I found this to be a long, strange, and oftentimes laugh-out-loud, hilarious story of mothers and sons, video games, and the civil rights movement in the 60s. So at the beginning of the novel, we are introduced to a man named Samuel Anderson Anderson. A man who published one successful novel, but since then has not written much at all. And he's teaching at a small college, but usually just spends Andrew, this is where I thought of you, because he spends most of his time playing an online game called Elfscape, where he gets on with other players. And what's the name of the game?
League of Legends. And it's funny, because League of Legends, there's no elves.
Oh, there's no elves. There's
all kinds of creatures. But I don't know that any of them are actually
elves. Well, he has to get on with other teammates, and they come together to fight together.
And I could get on with other teammates, but there's nobody stupid enough to actually play this game that I know.
Okay. Well, he plays a character called Dodger the Elven Thief. And just the scenes describing the gameplay are just hilarious. I actually, at some points, had to stop running. I was laughing so hard at this book, especially when the narrative shifts over to an Elfscape expert player named Oponich. And Laura, you read a lot of this book, too.
It's hilarious.
There's this guy who's driven everyone in his real life away because all he does is sit around and play Elfscape every day. But, you know, and he always thought, well, tomorrow's the day I'm going to start that diet. Tomorrow's the day I'm going to stop playing Elfscape. And just goes on and on and on. So it turns out that Samuel's mother, Faye, who walked out on him when he was a kid, she is arrested for throwing rocks at a presidential candidate.
Woo!
Yes. And but Samuel...
Which seems tame compared to what we've just lived through.
Exactly, yeah. Well, Samuel, good news for him, yes.
Is that what you also call rock the vote?
Rock. Yes, exactly.
I don't think that's what they mean.
Samuel... he was about to get booted by his publisher because he hasn't been writing anything. Well, guess what? Now his publisher wants him to write a tell-all book about her, and that's when the story does a deep dive into her past and a fascinating look at the civil rights movement of the 60s. We got hippies, cops, and even Allen Ginsberg himself.
Huh.
I just need to shout out the narrator, Ari Fliakos. So this was actually, and I looked him up afterwards.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out that this book was the winner for, he won the Audi Award for 2016 for fiction.
Oh, so, no wonder.
Well deserved.
Wow.
And I know, Laura, so I would like play you little clips of it, you know.
Andrew, this whole time, you're...
He's been a professional because he's been getting attacked
by... He is a professional.
...the puppy the whole time.
The thing is, you're on the sofa, so he thinks you're fair game.
That's right.
So I think what we'll have to
settee,
do next time...
Floral settee.
Is I'll take the settee, Andrew will take this chair, and I will handle the pups.
Oh, no, it's fine.
I feel bad about it.
No, you shouldn't, because when I'm home, two dogs, two cats. Right?
Yeah, but they're not puppies anymore.
Three kids.
They're not babies.
But like our golden retriever constantly.
The golden retriever is a tough one.
And then if
if
one dog comes over, then the other dog comes over.
Oh,
and
we
if
know
a
how that was.
Comes over,
oh, the cats.
Then basically the other dogs come over, and our cats are affectionate. They're loving. They're affectionate. I mean, you know.
So
is that a dig at our cats? I don't mind.
I think it is.
Well, I mean,
it's
you know.
Well deserved.
It's true.
Yeah, your cat is not.
No,
cuddly.
I wouldn't say loving and affectionate are any words that I'd use to describe our cat.
Vicious.
Anyway,
how many trips to the ER have you had because of that cat?
All right.
Two.
Let's
two visits.
Yeah, that's true. Let's take a listen to a clip of Ari Fliakos reading Nathan Hill's book, The Knicks.
Why did the turtles do it? The leading theory was that they began doing it eons ago, when South America and Africa were still locked together. Back then, only a river might have separated the continents, and the turtles laid their eggs on the river's far bank. But then the continents began drifting apart, and the river widened by about an inch per year, which would have been invisible to the turtles. So they kept going to the same spot, the far bank of the river, each generation swimming a tiny bit farther than the last one. And after 100 million years of this, the river had become an ocean, and yet the turtles never noticed. This, Samuel decided, was the manner of his mother's departure. This was how she moved away. Imperceptibly, slowly, bit by bit. She whittled down her life until the only thing left to remove was herself.
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. Check that one out. It's a really good one. And that'll do it for us this week. Thank you so much to Marion Keyes for joining us, and you're going to want to pick up her new book, My Favorite Mistake. Until next time, my name is Dave Medicus. See ya.
Adios.
Excelsior.
Oh my God, I've changed so much. Don't judge me.